KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 7:05, we have mostly cloudy skies. 14 degrees our current temperature now here at the KJN studios, as we've just jumped up a couple of degrees here within the last few minutes. And we look for partly cloudy to cloudy skies here today, with a high of 27, some chance of some scattered flurries that'll linger over through the overnight into tomorrow as well. Less than a half inch accumulation expected here in the KJN listening area. And good morning, I'm Chris Parks with a check of the latest in-state and local news. And local news, overnight, the Red Oak Police Department reports two arrests. At 7:11 p.m., officers arrested 60-year-old Edwin Bryant Vondelingen of Red Oak for domestic abuse assault, a simple misdemeanor. He was arrested in the 100 block of East Valley Street and was taken to the Montgomery County Jail. Vondelingen is being held on no bond. And at 2:47 a.m. Saturday, Red Oak police arrested 41-year-old Jason Edward Johnson of Red Oak at the intersection of Ironwood Avenue and Highway 34. He was arrested for public intoxication and taken to the Montgomery County Jail and held on $300 bond. Authorities say human remains have been found buried on the property of a Cedar Rapids home, and officials believe they may be those of a missing Eastern Iowa man. The Linn County Sheriff's Office says in a news release that its deputies and other law enforcement agencies searched the property Thursday and found the buried remains. The body has been taken to the state medical examiner's office for an autopsy. Officials say that while no positive identification has been made yet, it appears the body may have connection to the disappearance of Christopher Bagley, who went missing on December 14th. No other details of what led police to the property or how the victim may have died were released. The Iowa Supreme Court restored a Des Moines vicious dog ordinance on Friday that an appeals court had found to be unconstitutionally vague. The justices voted 3-3, upholding an initial district court ruling that went in favor of the city. The case involved a mixed breed dog named Pinky and a neighbor's cat named Rebel, which were both allowed outside without restraints and fought. Both animals survived. The city officials blamed Pinky, and she was taken away from her owner in March of 2016 after the city's chief humane officer concluded she exhibited vicious propensities under the city's dangerous animal ordinance. And she was initially to be quarantined for a week, but a day before release, the city chose to declare her a dangerous dog and notified owner Diana Helmers that of plans to keep her. She remained held without access to visits from her family for nearly 2 years. Pinky was released to Helmers last April when the Iowa Court of Appeals ruled 3-2 that the city's definition of a dangerous dog was too vague. The state Supreme Court's order offered no details of the court's deliberation and simply stated that three justices would affirm the district court ruling and three would reverse it, and pointing out that in such cases, the district court's ruling stands. Pinky has been living at Helmers Pet Rescue Facility near Rhinebeck, about 90 miles northeast of Des Moines. Helmers attorney Jamie Hunter said the city can seek custody of Pinky again, although the dog is now 11 years old and at the upper end of her life expectancy. City officials said in a statement Friday they were talking with Helmers about allowing Pinky to remain with her if terms can be reached that protect the dog and the public. City manager Scott Sanders said in a statement that he never intended to euthanize the dog. If an agreement cannot be reached to keep her with Helmers, the city will pay to have Pinky adopted out of state. Hunter, who has other court challenges to the city's animal ordinance pending in court, said it continues to be an ongoing issue for dog owners. She said the best way to address that is the city can amend its ordinance to make it clearer and fairer for its residents so we're not constantly litigating it. A man wanted on several warrants, including kidnapping and stalking charges, tried to escape from authorities last night in Lamar's. At about 11 o'clock on Thursday night, officers saw 31-year-old Jose Murillo drive into a Lamar's park. Several officers tried to arrest Murillo, but he drove away at a high rate of speed. He used a large pile of snow as a ramp, but after clearing that first hurdle, his Chevy Malibu failed to make it over a second snow pile. And Murillo got out of the car, which was hung up on the snowbank, and ran, but was quickly surrounded by a group of officers, including a police dog, and arrested. Authorities have identified three people killed in an eastern Iowa house fire as a mother and her two daughters. The Quad City Times reports that the Muscatine County Medical Examiner's Office issued a news release Friday identifying those killed as 35-year-old Amy Wentz and her daughters, 17-year-old Andrea Schroeder and a 6-year-old Lily Wentz. The three died in a Monday night fire that destroyed their Muscatine home and critically injured another person who has not been named. Officials say the injured person, who was found by firefighters outside the home, is in a coma at Iowa City Hospital. Authorities say the cause of the fire is currently listed as undetermined. The investigation into the fire and deaths continues. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is planning to attend events in the Des Moines area next week. The State Department announced Friday that Pompeo would be in the Des Moines area on Sunday and Monday to discuss agriculture issues and about how the agency serves U.S. interests by promoting American exports. Pompeo plans to speak at a future Farmers of America event, tour an agriculture research center, and attend an event at the World Food Prize headquarters in Des Moines. He also will meet with Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. The State Department says former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, now the ambassador to China, will accompany Pompeo. The department is expected to provide more details about the visit later. And the president and owner of Rex Pharmacy in Atlantic announced on Friday plans for its two current Atlantic locations, Rex Pharmacy Downtown and the Atlantic Medical Center Pharmacy, to merge and become one pharmacy located in the former Sears building at 1607 East 7th Street. Josh Bohr says the plans are the result of Rex Pharmacy's desire to make community pharmacy a more viable part of patient outcomes in Atlantic and the surrounding area. Rex Pharmacy has been in its current location on Chestnut Street in downtown Atlantic for more than 75 years, which is why Bohr says it was a tough decision to make that change.
We really talked about it with our team, our leadership team, to try to figure out, you know, really what we needed to do to get to the next level. We felt was to consolidate our efforts, and we're really excited about the services and the service level that we'll be able to provide in the consolidated version of Rex Pharmacy.
He said the new location at 7th and Hospital Drive will open up more opportunities to serve their current and future customers.
Always thought that spot just seemed to be a good location for a pharmacy, and so when the opportunity kind of arose, you know, we looked at it and said, you know, this could be a good opportunity, could potentially be a threat as well. So really that's what started us thinking about it. But I think that at the end of the day, we really wanted to improve our access overall to the community. And I think the location with the visibility, our ability to have a drive-through pickup window at that location, those are the sort of things that really kind of pushed it over and made it an easier decision for us.
And while there are two competing pharmacies in the same area, Bohr said there's room for more opportunities to serve customers.
We work pretty collaboratively with all the other pharmacies. We're all out there trying to do the best for our customers. So, you know, I don't think it will really change or impact our relationship with either of them. I think we have a good collaborative relationship with them, and I would expect that would continue.
The new Rex Pharmacy, Atlantic Medical Center Pharmacy, will offer private clinical rooms for patient medication reviews, education, consultations, and immunizations.
As pharmacy has changed over the years, you know, we've really had to kind of adapt our workflow. And so we're going to set up the new place that will provide a lot more privacy in clinical areas, so from immunizations to more enhanced medication therapy management education. You know, we'll have private rooms where we can talk one-on-one with patients about their medications and health-related issues.
It will be a full-service pharmacy with all the over-the-counter medications and supplements, as well as in-home medical equipment and supplies. Bohr says the transition is expected to take place sometime this summer.
We don't have the exact date drilled down now, and we will be making, you know, more official announcements in 30 days, at minimum 30 days leading up to the exact date. But we're looking at midsummer, so July 1st, you know, give or take a few weeks.
And he's currently exploring the possibilities for other occupants of the downtown building once that move takes place. And the Iowa Department of Human Services officials have used the state safe haven procedures for the 33rd time since the law went into effect. Officials say a boy was born February 2nd at an Iowa hospital, and the infant was released to the custody of DHS. A court hearing to terminate parental rights is held within a month. Specific details are withheld in order to protect the identity of the parents and the child. Through Iowa Safe Haven law, parents have the option to safely hand over custody of babies aged 30 days or younger without fear of prosecution for abandonment. The parent and their or their authorized representative can leave the newborn at a hospital or healthcare facility and remain anonymous. The safe haven law was approved in the wake of a high-profile case in 2001 involving a teen mother in eastern Iowa who killed her home-delivered newborn. Infants who are safe haven babies are placed with currently approved foster or adoptive families. If you're interested in becoming a foster or adoptive parent, you can visit iowafosterandadoption.org. For more information on the safe haven procedure, you can go to dhs.iowa.gov/safe-haven. That's a look at some of the latest in state and local news. Now taking a look at your funeral announcements this morning. Wayne Donald Fossil, age 79, of Earlham, died February 23rd at Methodist West Hospital in West Des Moines. And visitation for Wayne Fossil will be held today from 10 to 11 a.m. at the Earlham Presbyterian Church, followed by a memorial service at the church. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Earlham has arrangements. Evelyn Karras, age 89, of Messina, died February 21st at Caring Acres Nursing and Rehab Center in Anita. Funeral services for Evelyn Karras will be held today at 11 a.m. at the Greenfield Gospel Chapel in Greenfield. Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield has arrangements. George Marnin, age 78, of Stover, Missouri, and formerly of Anita, died February 20th at University Hospital in Columbia, Missouri. Memorial services for George Marnin will be held today at 1 p.m. at Hockenberry Funeral Home in Anita. Ethel Armstrong, age 97, of Fontenelle, died Monday at the Greenfield Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center in Greenfield. Funeral services for Ethel Armstrong will be held on Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Fontenelle United Methodist Church. Steen Funeral Home in Fontenelle has the arrangements. Patricia Pat Dvorak, age 86, of Elkhorn and formerly of Atlantic, has died at the Salem Lutheran Home in Elkhorn. A Mass of Christian Burial for Pat Dvorak will be held on Monday at 10 a.m. at Saints Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Atlantic. Roland Funeral Home Atlantic has arrangements. Sharon Blanchard, age 61, of Fontenelle, died Sunday at her home. A celebration of life service for Sharon Blanchard will be held Monday at 11 a.m. at the Fontenelle United Methodist Church with a luncheon to follow. Steen Funeral Home in Fontenelle has the arrangements. Tammy Green Magner, age 51, of Hamlin, died Friday at Stewart Memorial Community Hospital in Lake City. Funeral services for Tammy Green Magner will be held on Wednesday at 2 p.m. at the Lamp Funeral Home in Lake City. Eleanor Caroline Brown, age 96, of Avoca, died Friday at home. Mass of Christian Burial for Eleanor Caroline Brown will be held on Friday, 10:30 a.m. at the St. Mary's Catholic Church in Avoca. Polly Jones Funeral Home in Avoca has the arrangements. Clara Teresa Bledsoe, age 89, of Glenwood, died Tuesday at the Glen Haven Home in Glenwood. Celebration of life services for Clara Teresa Bledsoe will be held on May 3rd at 2 p.m. at the Polly Jones Funeral Home in Avoca. Kenneth Bartlett, age 90, of Creston and formerly of Orient, died Friday at the Creston Specialty Care in Creston. Funeral services for Kenneth Bartlett are pending at the Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield. Donna Joyce Jackson Wadsworth, age 76, of Stewart, died February 17th at home. Per her wishes, cremation has taken place and no services are planned for Donna Wadsworth. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has the arrangements. And Marge Hightoff, age 98, of Panora, and formerly of Manning, died Friday at Lakeside Village Assisted Living in Panora. Services for Marge Hightoff are pending at Odie Funeral Home in Manning. That's a look at your latest in funeral announcements and news here on KJAN. I'm Chris Parks, KJAN News.